I was 10 when the light in my grandparents' cellar started turning on at night. My father's parents owned the house in a lot next to their own, a shabby affair that needed work best performed by a younger back than my grandfather's. The paint shades didn't match, the doors didn't always hang straight, the floorboards screeched like cats in the alley behind the street. But it was warm in winter, cool in summer, and I had my own room with a window facing my grandparents' yard, so I always knew when they were out and about. I think every boy loves his grandma, if she only lets him. If she can tolerate the mess and mud, ply him with snacks and hugs and kisses on his skinned knee, she will have his whole heart. Every day, I would launch myself out the back door of my house when I saw her puttering around the yard, careening toward her and slowing only on the last step before hugging her tight. She always hugged back, laughing and smelling like dish soap and chopped tomatoes. She had a little patch of green ones and line-dried clothing. She would joke each time how I was getting taller, how one day I'd be so tall I'd have to catch her. "You'll knock me in the next week if you're not careful, Corey." Her hair was silk white, but she let it grow long and straight, not like the little old ladies that had the tiny curled puff at church. It made her look younger, more free. Grandma was a funny lady, the only woman I'd ever known who liked sweet onions enough to take a whole bite out of one, horrifying other adults in the vicinity. She could also play pranks, something that deeply impressed me. Once, she innocently asked me if I'd like to try her mug of coffee. Not knowing she took it without any kind of cream or sugar, I eagerly accepted the foreign drink. The bitterness was overwhelming, and I spat the mouthful on the floor. She laughed hard, all her teeth in it, before giving me a peace offering of candy. I laughed too. Bad tastes didn't last long back then. My grandpa was different. He had a shed in the backyard, a red old thing I think was lined with lead paint into the 2010s. A cement step to the doorway served as a stoop, and on this, he planted his squat frame in warm weather. Here, he would tinker with car parts, engines, and, most of all, lawnmowers. His collection was extensive. The carport covered next to the shed shielded dozens of mowers, some of which had been dropped by for him to repair by neighbors. Others he'd see by garbage bins while driving his pickup and decide they weren't ready to give up the ghost yet. He'd haul them home and fiddle to his heart's content. Sometimes they were repaired, and most of the time they were harvested for parts. Rust crept up the old frames, and the ones in the back sat so long I could swear they were starting to fuse together. Back then it was intriguing. As an adult, it was a risk of exposure to tetanus. Luckily, my parents believed in vaccines. Grandpa's hands always smelled like oil, a greasy rag in his hands as he wiped them absently. The sharp smell soaked into his skin, contrasting with the sweet odor of talcum. He was hard of hearing, so he spoke loud, and I had to do the same to properly converse. I would chat with him, but he did not respond with that brightness that Grandma did. He grunted, spoke in short sentences, always wiping his hands. He'd ask how I was doing in school, mouth set in that vague scowl old men's wrinkles settle into as they age. After a while, he would banish me gently to my grandmother's doting, leaving him to work and watch. If I played in the yard, he did not intervene, merely keeping an eye on me to confirm I was safe. I loved my grandparents, but it wasn't the same as Grandma. If I loved her like a fire, brilliant and full of energy and light, I loved him like a street lamp, distant and a little hazy, but a welcome sight. He didn't hug me. He barely ever hugged Grandma. For me, he just patted my head. Until I was 10, I lived a blissful life. My greatest worry was whether or not I'd figure out long division or why I didn't hate the blonde girl with curly pigtails in my class as much as I used to. Then, Grandma died. The first death in life is a prank without a peace offering. All bitter and nothing sweet, and no spitting it out to make it go away. I refused to believe it when my father came back from next door, sat me down with tears in his eyes, and explained Grandma was now with Jesus. I was angry. It wasn't a funny joke to pretend she was gone. Not at all. She'd be mad at him for lying. The ache of loss was sharper than I could have imagined, and it felt like I'd been kicked all the way down to my stomach, and I couldn't catch my breath. Grandma was gone. I would never, ever, ever be able to run out in the yard and hug her again. I was never going to be able to catch her in a hug because she'd gone too soon, before I could ever be tall enough. I bawled, cried harder than I ever had, until I had to fight to breathe. Dad cried too, hugging me tight, but he didn't smell like tomatoes, and we used a dryer and fabric softening sheets for our clothes. The funeral was wretched. People talked about her being in heaven, a better place, about not hurting or being sad anymore. I mutinously thought that couldn't be true, because I wasn't there, so of course she must be sad. She would miss me. To see people smiling ached. They could think of memories of her with fondness. I could only feel the loss. I'd spend every day by her. I loved her best, most. I had not unlearned the selfishness of a child just yet. The neighbor who lived in the house past my grandma's was a comfort. A pretty blonde woman named Angelica. She had a soft frame and a welcoming smile. She sat by me and talked about how it had hurt when she lost her husband, that it would get better over time. Part of me didn't want to feel better, because it felt like that meant loving Grandma less, like removing the pain meant losing the connection. And then, there was Grandpa. When a spouse of so many years loses their better half, a chunk of them dies at the same time. His scowl sank into despondency. Over the following months, the life leaked out of him like oil, rotting like the unfinished lawnmowers and untended tomato plants. No new mowers nested under the carpet, only the familiar ones. Weeds ate up the garden. Clothes weren't put up on the line anymore. My mother would bring Grandpa's solid clothes over and wash them, and Dad would dry them and bring them back, folding them and tucking them into the chest of drawers. I doubted Grandpa changed his clothes very often. He began to smell of stagnant sweat and dust. He spent his time in his easy chair, staring at the television. It was only on part of the time. Angelica was a saint. She knew my parents both worked and offered to check in on Grandpa. They accepted with relief, and she would brook no payment, in spite of the fact that she lived in a rather tiny house and didn't seem to have much extra money. Grandpa had no opinion on her visiting and helping. He had little opinion on anything, and she was given a spare key. My parents and I visited frequently, and Angelica would visit in the mornings to fix a bit of breakfast, so Grandpa was getting at least one good meal in. He probably would have survived on canned beef stew and candy bars otherwise. One night, when heading to bed, I looked into the yard between our houses, and I saw a light. The house my grandparents lived in had stood before the World Wars and through Prohibition. Grandma used to tell me the cellar had originally been for storing vegetables and dry goods throughout winter, and when liquid relief from life's troubles was forbidden, it had been converted for the production of moonshine. It had long since been turned into a storage room, though I liked to pretend I was a bootlegger hiding out from the law while she played a cop that could never quite catch up to me. There was a smaller room off the main cellar with a door, and it functioned as more storage with no bulb of its own. In that whole cellar, the only light was a yellow, warm bulb that lit the stone walls up just enough to be eerie. I stared at it midway through buttoning my pajama shirt. The window was small and grimy, a few inches of wavy glass lit up in gold and crusted with spiderweb. I couldn't see anyone inside, but the switch was in the cellar, so someone had to be down there. The light shone from the main room into the small one, but I couldn't make out anything from the main room at all. Grandpa wasn't in terrible condition at that point, but it was an odd thought that he was shuffling around downstairs. I forgot the matter by morning. 2 years passed. I tried to visit Grandma with my dad. He would stare at us, say little, but he would sometimes reach out and put his hand on my head, patting with his fingers. They'd grown thinner.
"Your Graham always said you'd be tall."
My throat would hurt, and his shiny eyes would swim. Whenever we left, I'd hug Grandpa. He didn't hug back, his old, weather-beaten skin losing its elasticity and slumping on his wasted muscles and bones. It taught me that death was not just sudden, but also slow. I don't know why he didn't hug. I think maybe he didn't know how. He would twitch like he'd want to, but it would always be a pat on the head. The light in the cellar didn't turn on every night. Sometimes the dark was unbroken, cast in the shade of trees in the yard, but ever so often, I would see that familiar golden glow. I never said anything about it to my family. It was a light turning on, perfectly innocuous. There was nothing strange about it.
What if it's your grandma's ghost?
I almost dropped my controller, and to his credit, my friends didn't use the opportunity to speed past me. Fixing my eyes on the screen, I redoubled my efforts. What do you mean?
The light turns on sometimes, right?
He jerked his head toward the window.
Maybe it's your grandma saying hey.
Colors rushed past as we battled for first. Jacoby groaned as I inched past him to victory, plopping his face into his snack bowl. You believe in ghosts? I asked.
I don't know. I guess I don't not believe.
My best friend had slept over a dozen times and loved a good ghost story. But looking at his dark eyes and serious expression, I didn't think he was trying to spin a yarn. He seemed earnest.
He said he used to play together down there. Maybe she's just letting you know she's looking out for you.
Or Grandpa goes into the basement to check for mice, I said, sharper than I meant to. Jacoby closed his mouth, looking toward my collection of games. He had two sisters, so game funds for his family had to be split between things like Super Smash Brothers and Barbie Horse Adventures. I had nothing but the good stuff. I leaned back on my hands. I don't think I want it to be my grandma. I don't want her stuck here as a ghost.
Oh, yeah, I guess ghosts only stick around if they have unfinished business.
Jacoby seemed ready to move on, but I lingered over that thought. Had Grandma had things she wanted to do? Places she wanted to see? Things she wanted to say? He must have read my silence correctly, because he asked,
"Do you want to go see?"
I let my fingers rest on the boxes. I don't want to go in the cellar, but we can look through the window. Jacob's eyes gleamed, but he kept his excitement in check.
Sure, might just be something wrong with the switch.
We weren't to find out that night. As we slid our shoes on, the light shut off. Exchanging looks, we waited to see if it would come back on. It didn't.
Still want to check it out?
Jacoby asked. I shook my head. It's not a ghost, I said. But what if it was? What if it was my grandma and she needed help? If she was still in this world, I could see her again. But if she was stuck in this world alone, that was too sad. If the light comes back on, we'll go over, I said at last, and we settled into our sleeping bags. I had a bed, of course, but it was more fun if both of us were on equal flooring. We managed to stay awake about half an hour before we drifted off. Morning brought sunshine and waffles, Mom taking Jacoby back home with no more talk of ghosts. I think two things set everything into motion. The first was, a month after our sleepover, Jacoby's parents decided to go on a couple's retreat for their 12th anniversary. They asked my parents if we'd be willing to watch him for a week. My parents agreed, and I was delirious with excitement. The second was me telling Grandpa about the light. We sat on his porch, a rare deviation from his haunted frame in his armchair. The weather was too pretty not to partake.
Your parents saying you're gonna be having a friend over this week. That little dark-headed boy.
Jacoby. Yeah. He's my best friend. I had no compunction admitting it. He glanced at me, and his mouth twisted a little. A smile, despite the weight.
It's good you got friends. I had a lot of fun as a kid with the boys in my neighborhood. He paused. You don't have a BB gun, do you?
I blinked. Got a Nerf gun, Grandpa.
I've seen A Christmas Story.
He laughed. It was a rare sound, raspy and creaky.
Just as well, won't end up with a pellet in your knee.
I heard Mom and Angelica talk in the house. Mom accepting the latest batch of laundry.
You've been working on the tomato patch. That's lovely. I hated to see it go to seed.
Oh, I think a garden will brighten the place up, Angelica said. Flowers and vegetables. I think I'll have 8 plots by the time I'm satisfied. Henry seems to like the idea.
I think it'll be good for him to look out and see the garden.
Mom said, her voice dropping slightly. Jacoby would be over any minute. Grandpa coughed, and the noise was wet, phlegmy.
Phew,
he muttered.
I miss your grandma times like these. She would have been chomping at the bit to get out the garden right now.
I nodded. She would have. I used to use the trowel to help her fill the flower beds. She said I was like a little dachshund. I smiled before asking, Grandpa, do you believe in ghosts? His nose wrinkled.
Oh, they make good stories, but no. I think we go on after we kick it. Your grandma's in heaven.
I think so, too. It's just, I'm being dumb. I see the light downstairs come on at night sometimes, through that little window.
Grandpa shifted on the swing.
Could be a short. Wiring down there is old. Is it a flicker?
No, it's on for a while, usually. 2 hours is the longest I've counted.
He sat up a little.
Ever seen anyone?
Nope. I don't know. Maybe it's Grandma. Come to say hello.
He stared at me, and I suddenly felt foolish. I shrank in my seat, wondering if Mom and Angelica were almost done talking. He said nothing, eyes slowly shifting to the view of the front yard. It was green and bursting, the grass lush and cool.
Do you?
He began.
Corey, let's go. We've got to get the laundry started. And then you need to help me shop for the snacks Jacoby likes.
Mom carried the hamper, declining Angelica's offer to carry it. The blonde woman smiled at me, and I was reminded of the girl in class that I didn't hate.
I can take the keys and wait by the car, I suggested, not wanting to have to help load laundry.
Mom paused.
Angie, would you mind watching him?
My mother was diligent. In spite of the safety of the small neighborhood, she'd never let me wander unsupervised. Angelica nodded, and I was entrusted with my mother's key ring. I turned to Grandpa.
I'll see you later,
I said, too embarrassed to say more. I took the steps off the porch and headed to the car, Angelica following behind. I couldn't help but glance at the cellar window as I crossed from my grandparents' side yard into our own, up to the driveway.
Your grandpa's a sweet man, Angelica said, breaking the quiet. He reminds me of my granddad.
Yeah, he's all right. I didn't know what to say. Angelica seemed at ease, but I felt shy.
Do you believe in ghosts?
I asked suddenly.
Ghosts? I do. I like the idea that the people we love can hang around. At least a little piece of them, you know?
It was very sweet and very cheesy, but she seemed to mean it.
I don't think they haunt us, though.
I hope they don't. I hope they're all okay. If they're even real, I added, suddenly embarrassed to be talking about ghosts with a grown-up.
Miss Angelica, why do you live alone?
She paused, and I wondered if I'd asked something rude, but she spoke again after a moment.
Well, I didn't always. I was married until 3 years ago. Then my husband passed away. It really broke my heart. The house gets so lonely when you're used to hearing someone else there. Maybe that's why I want to help your grandpa. I know how it feels to lose someone important.
She was somber for a moment, but then brightened.
Plus, I love old houses. They're creaky, but they're big. Lots of space. Houses don't seem to have such big rooms nowadays, you know?
Sensing she didn't want to talk about her dead husband, I was still struck by the kindness of her. She was taking her hurt and using it to help someone else.
Why do you ask about ghosts? Do you think that you've seen one?
She sounded so sweet, not mocking at all. I decided I could tell her the truth. She listened intently, sun making her hair glow gold. The gentle smile faded, but it only melted into sorrow, not disbelief.
Oh, honey, I can explain that.
Her face fell, very hesitant.
I'm sorry if this disappoints you, but your grandpa is the one doing that with the lights.
I blinked.
You see, sometimes when people get old, they can act very strange. He's doing something called sundowning. If he's going downstairs, I'll have to talk to your parents. Let me talk to him, okay?
Grandpa was the one doing this. I didn't dare contradict her, but I said, he didn't say he was doing it. Could he not realize it?
I'm afraid so. It's not so uncommon for people to forget things from when they're sundowning.
She put a hand on my shoulder.
I'm sorry, hon. It may be time for your grandpa to be moved someplace where he can get around-the-clock support. Me and your parents can't really give him all the care he needs.
I hated the thought of grandpa going to a home. I hated the mental image of a smelly, cramped place with old people sitting around playing bingo. But mom and dad wouldn't put him somewhere like that. Surely they couldn't be as terrible as all that, right?
Was that what you all were talking about? The lights?
Angelica asked. Her blue eyes drifted back toward me. Before she could say anything else, my mother appeared from the back door.
I'll see you later, Miss Angelica.
Have fun with your friends. I'll chat with your grandpa before I head back, okay? Last thing we want is him hurting himself on those stairs.
With that, and a wave, she strolled back towards Grandpa's house. Mom and I were off to the grocery, and I felt better and worse at the same time. Not only was it not Grandma, which was good and bad, but it was a sign Grandpa was getting old and confused. More change, more loss. Jacoby arrived that evening and managed to shake me out of my reverie. Mom and Dad generously piled us with snacks and PG movies, watching a few of us before they headed to bed. Don't stay up too late, Dad told us. You have a whole week to enjoy, so try to pace yourselves, When their bedroom door closed, Jacoby turned to look at me.
So, you want to check out the cellar?
I was surprised. You don't really think there's a ghost in there, do you? He was evasive.
I don't want to go to sleep yet. I want to do something.
Did you sneak another soda?
What are you, my mom?
He rolled his eyes, buzzing with energy.
My neighbor told me it was my grandma. Sunwalking or something. Like old people do it sometimes. She knows about the lights.
I informed him. The eagerness in him guttered out like a candle.
Oh, you sure?
Well, she said it was. I figure that makes more sense than ghosts. Jacoby gazed wistfully out my window.
I guess so. It's not like I want your grandma stuck there. But if it's your grandma, think we could go check anyway? Just to be completely sure?
I didn't like the idea of running into Grandpa half asleep and acting weird in the night, but if the light did come on, that meant he was heading down into the cellar, and he might get hurt on the stairs. So maybe it wasn't a bad idea to check and see. And what if Angelica was wrong? What if it wasn't always Grandpa turning on the light? Nervous, but longing for a little bit of adventure, I caved. I guess it wouldn't hurt anything. Jacoby crowed with triumph and opened his bag of clothes. He'd smuggled a flashlight along and insisted we sneak out the back door, only after putting pillow versions of ourselves in the sleeping bags on the floor. I knew for a fact that Dad actively went to check I was breathing when he woke up, so a perfectly still pillow would do nothing, but we didn't plan to be gone longer than 15 minutes. So, we grabbed some pillows, shoved them under the blankets, and crept out the back door. The weight of the night was cool and buzzed with the chirp of crickets. Jacoby led the way, elated to be on an adventure, ducking into the shadows of trees and bushes. I followed him, not wanting to rain on his parade, a little excited in spite of myself.
You got a key to the front or back door?
Jacoby asked. I paused and told him I didn't. He gave me a look. Hold on, I whispered, scuttling back into the house and returning with my dad's keys. He leaves them in his pants all the time, I said, shrugging. We resumed sneaking, and we elected to unlock the back door.
Hey, does your grandpa have a gun or a knife or anything?
Jacoby asked as I held open the screen door just outside the main wooden one.
I wouldn't have said yes to this if he did,
I said wryly, relieved Jacoby sighed.
My pappy does. I'd never try this at his house.
With a turn of the key, the door swung open. It creaked slightly, and we hustled inside, drawing it too behind us in case we needed to make a quick exit.
Where are the stairs?
I led him down the hall and into the kitchen. The cellar door was on the other side of the kitchen, though the room was strange and lifeless at night. Jacoby's flashlight lit the way, but I could have stepped around every chair blindfolded. No fresh tomatoes sat on the table now, nor any sweet onions. I opened the cellar door, and we looked down into deep black.
Wasn't the light on when we headed out?
Jacoby whispered. Yeah. The light was to the left, and I snapped it on. It was a sharp noise, metallic, and the lights hummed as they flooded the room. Maybe it's already gone. Or maybe Grandpa had woken up and come back upstairs. I took the flashlight. Wait here. I want to check something. I rolled my feet as best I could across the carpet, avoiding the creakiest part of the floor, and made it to the sitting room. Casting the beam of light in, I carefully made it to where the foot of Grandpa's armchair was. I didn't want to wake him if he was asleep. So I shone the light just near enough the chair to catch sight of his shoes and socks and slightly too short khakis. The room was perfectly silent. I flicked off the light and rushed back to Jacoby. Grandpa's asleep in his chair. Let's go down. Jacoby led the way, drinking in the sight of the room.
Your grandpa fish or hunt?
Not for a long time. Why? Jacoby gestured to the room, and I looked across as it came into view. The cellar was different. The storage was mostly gone, as the family had taken things Grandpa hadn't wanted around, but there were coolers, big ones, like the kind we'd take for a full day outside. All the boxes that had held Grandma and Grandpa's excess things had been loaded into the back room, stacked tall in the small compartment. I could see the wavy glass of the window from here. I haven't been down here in a long time. Nobody has. Grandpa doesn't want to throw this stuff out, I said, scanning the coolers. But I don't know what these are for. The nearest one reached Jacoby's stomach in height, and it sat beside an old desk loaded with gardening tools and duct tape. There was also a shovel, caked in dirt. Jacoby slowly turned his head.
Why do some of the coolers have duct tape around them?
I shook my head. He returned his gaze to the nearest cooler, slowly. Jacoby unlatched the lid and peered into it, studied the contents. A faintly stale, sour smell reached me. Then he shut it.
Hey, I want to.
I began. He turned to me, and his face was different. The anxious excitement had gone, and in its place were wide, staring eyes and a thin, silent mouth. His dark hair seemed black as ink against his white face. When he spoke, it was the barest whisper.
We have to get out of here.
I had a very large desire to push back, to question him, but I'd never seen my friend so frightened. Then I heard a shoe on the stairs, light and careful, trying to be quiet. Terror froze me in place for a moment, but Jacoby pushed me toward the back room and bolted on padded sneakers for the stacked coolers on the other side of the room. I stumbled into the back room and pulled the door to, wincing as it squeaked. The steps stopped, and I panted slightly with a wide mouth as I ducked down behind what little storage was inside, praying they wouldn't investigate. That wasn't Grandpa's gate, and ghosts wouldn't have footsteps, would they? The steps came down a little slower, cat's paws on earth, trying not to make a sound. I couldn't see the door from my cramped spot, just the window and cardboard boxes of Grandma's trinkets and gardening books and a few of her coffee mugs. They formed a wall to my right, and stone boxed me in on the left, and light fell in a beam from the open door, spilling through the window. I couldn't see out of it what the light reflected, but I knew my very own room was across the way. So close. So far. The door creaked. The beam grew wider. I breathed shallow little breaths through my mouth, trying to be silent. The moments drew on, long and fraught, and I waited for the person to step inside, to turn and see me cowering behind the boxes. Panic burst in my veins as I sat, trying not to shake, because if I did, the mugs might rattle and alert them. Finally, the door shut, casting me into utter darkness. Then, the latch clicked.
I was locked in. Did they know I was here?
I stared helplessly up at the window. It was thick glass, and it would shatter into knives if it broke at all. The old window had never opened, was never meant to open. I was too big to fit out of it anyway. I could hear the muffled footsteps, and as I peeked around the boxes, the bottom of the door was lit in sallow light. The person moved around, breaking the yellow up with black shadow. Jacoby was in here. Maybe he could get out and go get help. But he was on the opposite side of the room to the stairs, and with the person in there with the light on, there was no way he could sneak out. Mom and Dad would be asleep. They'd have no idea where we were. I rubbed my hands on my jeans, trying to dry my waxy palms. Could we hide long enough for the person to leave? They might not spend long down here. If I could just see who they were. Sharp movement. A gasp. Then I heard Jacoby.
No, no, I won't tell anyone, no.
His voice grew muffled, and I clamped a hand to my own mouth to stifle a sob. Trying the handle gingerly, I pulled and pushed, but found the latch held. The shadows under the door flailed and fought, and I backed away from it, praying Jacoby would kick free, would scream again, that I would hear his sneakers on the stairs. Instead, the shuffling grew slow and quiet, and all I could make out was the frantic panting of adult exertion. Jacoby didn't make a sound. I heard footsteps, precise again, pacing back and forth. Then they paused, and I heard the suctioned click of a cooler opening. The person grunted as if lifting something, and the thump of weight in the cooler. It closed and was locked. Then I heard thick, heavy tape ripping from a roll. This was real. Jacoby, who was... I cowered in the corner, trying to think of how to contact someone. I had no cell phone. No one would see the window in the dark. If I screamed, the person would be first to hear. Grandpa might not hear me bellowing even in his own house. My mind hurtled along headlong, crashing into hallways with no doors, no way out. And I tucked myself back into the corner and prayed so, so hard that the person didn't open the door again. The panting grew quiet as they finished, and their steps moved around the room. They were looking for anyone else. I imagined they could smell me, could track me like a dog, and I pressed my face into my knees. The light clicked off, and the steps retreated up the stairs. They hadn't looked in here. Maybe they were too frazzled. Maybe they didn't think anyone would have been stupid enough to hide in a place they couldn't escape from. Or maybe they were getting a weapon.
Corey,
I gasped.
Grandpa!
Hush. His voice came from outside the door, as if his lips were pressed right against the wood.
Don't say anything now. You just listen.
Grandpa, the lock.
I said hush.
His voice was a quiet roar, and I froze.
Listen, you see the box by you with Gina's gardening tools? There should be some of my pliers in there. Find them, quiet-like.
I obeyed, growing more confused by the moment. When they were in my hands, he continued.
Look at the hinges on the door. Can you see them?
The dark was all-encompassing. I closed my eyes.
No, I'm trying.
When I opened them again, my eyes had adjusted enough to make out the vaguest impression.
Grandpa, please unlock the door. I can't.
He sounded as if he were being strangled with tears.
Try, please. You need to get the pins out of the hinges. They're old. They aren't stuck in. Never got around to replacing them.
Why couldn't he unlock the door? Was he hurt? My throat swelled nearly shut. A pinprick opening, and I closed my eyes again. Let the dark truly soak my pupils. I blocked the bottom of the door with my arm, cutting off the light entirely. When I opened them again, I could make out a rusty old hinge with a long, thin piece of metal through the loops. Using the pliers, I gripped the head and pulled. It was rusty and stuck, so I jimmied it back and forth until the pin shrieked clear of the hinge. Was it too loud, or did it just seem loud because of the quiet, because of the tiny room? I got one, I whispered.
Good boy. Now you need to get the top one. But listen to me. They're at the top of the stairs. You won't be able to run past them quick enough.
I'd never heard my grandpa speak so quickly, so urgently.
When you get the pin free, the latch will hold the door as long as the hinges haven't separated. When you're ready, you holler. They'll come down quick, and when they do,
I run at the door as hard as I can and knock them down. I finished. It would take them by surprise.
You always have been a bright boy. As hard as you can. Don't worry about hurting them. Just hit them as hard as you can. Then you run up the stairs and outside, screaming for your mom and dad and anyone who will listen. Don't stop running.
But what about you? Will they hurt you?
There's nothing they can do to me now. Don't you worry.
He paused, and I could almost smell motor oil and talcum.
I love you. I never told you as much as I should, but it'll be all right. You can do it.
I dragged one of the boxes to the door, perching on the gardening books so I could reach the upper hinge, feeling for it when I couldn't make out the shape with my eyes as well. More jimmying and pulling, and the pin was out. The door seemed weightier all of a sudden, slotted awkwardly in its latch and only barely hanging on with the hinges. This was it. I was only going to get one shot. "Hide, Grandpa," I whispered. Then I backed up several steps until I stood under the window I'd watched so long.
"Help me!"
I howled, loud as I could manage. The effect was immediate. The steps rushed down, booking it toward the stairs. When I saw the shadow under the door, I pushed off the wall and slammed into it with all my might. The door flew out, crooked, one hinge more caught than the other. A solid wooden impact crashed into the figure, and I couldn't see them as they let out a high-pitched scream. I could hear something banging, the door wobbling under my weight as the person struggled, and I scrambled off the door and flew to the stairs. Taking them on all fours, I fled toward the back of the house, crashing through the screen door and into the cool night.
"Help! Help! They're after me!"
I had wondered before if adults would just ignore a child yelling, assuming they were playing. Not so at 2 a.m. I kept screaming, and lights came on in the neighborhood. My parents first. Voices, doors slamming, and me screaming for help all the while. I ran toward my house, terrified that they were behind me, that they would grab me and silence me, and everyone would fall back into bewildered sleep if I stopped calling for help. Then, Mom and Dad were there, and I was never so glad to smell that detergent. Several adults went into the house, including my dad. The person hadn't followed me. Mom sat with me on our porch, wrapping me in a blanket as noise filled the light. Soon, the flash of blue and red lights appeared, men and women in uniform, and the blocky white shape of an ambulance. I was fuzzy, suddenly, too tired to lift my head. The paramedic looked me over, said something about adrenaline, and the blankets were kept wrapped warm and safe around me as I sat, fully exhausted from my terror. When they carried Jacoby out, I was awake again, crying my eyes out. He was alive, bruises around his neck, where the attacker had pressed down on his trachea to keep him from breathing. His lips were a little blue, and the paramedics put a mask on him. His breath was faint against the plastic, but he was aware when I approached, grabbing his arm. There was care in the paramedic's hands, but no hurried urgency. He would be all right. Dad approached us, and he looked as if he'd aged 10 years in the span of 15 minutes. "What were you boys doing in the cellar?" he asked. And I was too tired and relieved to wither or fear getting in trouble. "The light kept coming on at night. We wanted to see if it was Grandma's ghost." He absorbed all this by rubbing his eyes, by wavering on the spot, by breathing deep and looking ready to cry.
"Who was it?"
"You didn't see?" I shook my head, but with the motion, I caught sight of a police car rolling away with a familiar face in the back seat. Her hair was wild, and her face sunken and haunted, puffy where she'd slammed into the concrete. But her eyes flitted toward me as the police passed. Angelica watched me with distant contempt as she disappeared from my sight. I stared after her. Dad realized and sighed, hands shaking. Mom held me tighter, kissing the top of my head with trembling lips.
"I can't believe it. She was always so kind. I don't understand,"
Mom whispered.
"Angelica, how could she? Why? Just 12 hours ago we'd been chatting, sun beaming down, the world at peace, and she tried to kill Jacoby."
Dad crouched in front of me and Mom, holding each of our hands.
"We need to go with Jacoby to the hospital, and they'll have questions for both boys soon enough."
Mom's eyes grew hard, but she nodded tensely. I watched Jacoby being loaded into the ambulance. "The officers can bring me and Corey if you want to go with Jacoby." Mom and Dad had a silent conversation with the flickering of their eyes to each other, to me, to Jacoby. Finally, Mom nodded, though her grip on me didn't loosen.
"It's okay, Mom. I'm with Dad,"
I said, too tired to panic at the thought of her being out of my sight. She accepted this, kissing my forehead before climbing into the ambulance, taking Jacoby's hand and talking softly to him. I couldn't even be excited to ride in a cop car, or nervous, come to think of it. Dad was beside me, arm around my shoulders. The officer said little, focused on the drive.
Dad, was Grandpa okay?
I asked. He tensed.
He was down there with me. He told me how to get out.
Dad was still. The cop glanced in the rear view. What do you mean, Corey? You saw your grandpa?
No, I heard him. When she went upstairs, he told me how to undo the hinges, to run and scream for help. Is he okay?
Dad seemed adrift, a balloon in a high wind, uncertain. Corey, your grandpa, he passed away early in the afternoon. I wasn't angry, just confused.
I heard him, Dad. I know I did. I wouldn't know how to open the hinges if he hadn't told me. He was down there.
Dad nodded slightly, but he seemed to be looking at my forehead, as if he couldn't focus on my face without breaking down. The police couldn't tell me much, and they had to question me. I only found out the details after my interview, that Grandpa had died 30 minutes after we left Angelica to go get snacks, that he had suffocated. His body had been sitting upstairs in his armchair, but he wasn't sitting in it quite the way he normally would, as if he'd been arranged there. Given his age and health, the coroners weren't sure they would have investigated an old man passing away without external injury. As it was, they found signs of saliva and vomit on one of the throw pillows. Angelica pled not guilty. I didn't favor her odds. I also found out what was in the coolers. Jacoby never spoke of it, only that he'd woken up inside the cooler, gasping for breath, and been in the middle of all of it. I never asked him what it was. The police settled on 8 victims, though there could have been more. There could always have been more. One of them was her former husband, and another the woman he cheated on her with. Maybe they whet her appetite. The light in the cellar came on one more time, after I'd returned home from the hospital and questioning. I watched it from my room, sitting vigil to watch for it. But instead of fear, I felt calm. The odor of motor oil and talcum rose around me.
She didn't have any unfinished business. That's why she wasn't here.
I heard him, clear as day. I didn't dare look around, not wanting to break the spell.
Is everything okay there?
Yeah, everything's all right here. Gina does miss you, though. And she loves you and your parents so very much.
I closed my eyes and rubbed my face, tears streaking against my palms. The sting of goodbye welled up in my lungs.
So, you had unfinished business?
Just one thing.
Warmth enveloped me, and I stood, eyes closed, tightening my arms around the frame that wasn't the same anymore. It wasn't flesh or blood, more like breath made solid, light poured in a mold. But it was safe, and it was good.
I love you, Corey, and I love your parents, too. We'll see you again. But not for a while.
A whiskery kiss planted on the top of my head. I held on to that warmth as long as I could.
I love you too, Grandpa.
With an exhale, he was gone, and the light in the cellar went dark. I never saw it turn on again.